You're listening to Proven Perspectives, a podcast with John Hawkins, the founder of Leadership Edge Incorporated. I'm Laura, John's daughter, and in each episode, we will explore a topic related to life, leadership, or mentoring. Through nearly 50 years of faith in Christ, John has learned proven life and leadership perspectives that will equip listeners for a lifestyle of leadership in their marriages, families, careers, communities, and churches. Hey, Dad.
Laura, it is good as always to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's good to hear yours too. And I hear you just came from chopping up some onions and carrots and all kinds of stuff.
You know, here in Southern California, there is this amazing nonprofit organization called Bracken's Kitchen. And it is, I think, the largest kitchen maybe in Orange County. And it makes meals for underserved, poor people in the Orange County area. They told me today that last year they served 1.75 million meals.
That's amazing.
That's that really just is. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So I got to chop almost 100 pounds of carrots today. So
well, I bet you're really good at it now.
I definitely picked up my speed. I was working beside one of their employees, and the carrots were in these 25-pound bags, and I'm just like modeling my way through one of these bags. And the guy beside me, he's like finished it, plus done two or three other things. And
that's
so I'm like,
awesome.
Will I ever get as fast as you are? And he said, well, maybe.
Yeah.
But I definitely got faster. You know, I've peeled a lot of carrots in my life, but I never thought about the fastest way to peel carrots. So I've developed, by God's grace, a little bit of carrot peeling expertise today.
That is awesome. Well, Dad, today we're going to be doing a podcast called Encouragement for Parents. And the reason that I asked you if we could do this episode is, you know, I think parents are pretty consistently tempted towards discouragement. And you are the greatest encourager that I know. And I think Adam and I would both say that you have been the greatest encourager in both of our lives. And I know not everybody has a friend like that. So I think one of the best things about the way you encourage is you don't just make, you know, like me feel good about Laura, but you really have such an authentic way of helping us refocus, like me and Adam refocus on, from a focus on ourselves maybe to a focus on God instead. So I'm just interested to hear your encouragement today. Anything you want to add?
Well, I just want to make sure we introduce the guest who's in our studio today.
A very special guest who you may hear.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have, Adam and I have a foster daughter, and our wonderful babysitter isn't able to watch her today. So we have our sweet little foster daughter with us today for the podcast. So yeah, if you hear someone snoring, don't be worried about Dad.
Yes, not Dad. And, you know, we just thought, what a great thing. This is an encouragement for parenting. And so we may have some actual noises in the background that remind you of parenting. But now that we've recognized our dear little foster child. Yes, Laura, the way you set it up sounds good, and I'm excited to get to be a part of this with you.
Awesome. And side note, I think we should mention that even though this episode is called Encouragement for Parents, I think that the themes that we're talking about really apply to like all life.
Yes.
So hopefully the episode will be encouraging for all of our listeners.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's get started. So, Dad, I know you have friendships with a lot of young dads, and I think everybody knows and has read lots of articles about how today's families have a lot of challenges. But I guess with the dads and the moms that you relate with, like, are there things that you think this generation is doing well? Like, please tell me there's one or two. So, anything that's going well.
Oh, would love to. Yeah, Janet and I, just by the nature of our work, we are with young couples and young families a lot, and definitely observe a lot of things. And, you know, as I've thought about this question, Laura, I've thought, you know, one of the things they're doing well is they're not quitting. And I know almost sounds like, you know, well, minimal praise there, but part of anything like parenting that is like a multi-year, 24/7 kind of commitment you're not going to be good at all of it. But the thing you can't do is you just can't quit.
Yeah.
And so as I look at the young parents who are in what I call their go-go years of, you know, early marriage, early kids, careers moving forward, just so much going on, I admire that they stay in the game. They keep trying to figure it out. And just like Janet and I had to learn to do, they try to figure it out as a couple. They don't fall into the really deadly kind of trap of, well, I'll just get through this the best way I can. You know, maybe the wife says that, the husband says, yeah, I'll just get through it the best I can. And then maybe after the kids are gone, we'll kind of come back together. And
yeah,
that is just a deadly approach. So that's one thing. I think another thing I see parents doing really all over the country in the U.S. is just wrestling well and thoughtfully about educating their children. You know, education is a real challenging situation, I think, for all families right now. And trying to figure out, you know, public school, private Christian school, homeschool, just wrestling with that. And, you know, if you've ever wrestled through that as a parent, you realize at best you fix it a year at a time, you know, and you kind of, okay, figure this out. Now let's figure the next thing out. Another thing I see parents doing really well right now is pushing back on some of the craziness. I think that family life right now can just be crazy in terms of all the extracurriculars and both educational and athletic and church and just all the things. And I see parents, again, different ones doing it different ways, but trying to figure out, on the one hand, they're trying to maximize the opportunities for their kids, for their development. But on the other hand, they're beginning to see some of just the inherent craziness and just, you know, get out of school and then it's 4 hours of other stuff and then you got homework and then on the weekends you're traveling with your sports team. Just pushing through that and figuring out, let's just stop for a few minutes and figure out how do we make this work well for our family and especially for the priorities that God has for our families. And I think that leads to the last thing I'll just comment on is because I work with a lot of Christian families and Christian couples, I see a lot of different ones of them trying to figure out what are God's priorities for our family? What are God's priorities for our marriage? And how do we keep those first? And as a husband and wife, how do we guide our children towards the Lord, you know, by our example, but also by teaching them and training them? How do we help them to be involved in Christian activities that really develop their soul? So it seems like what I've just said is they're balancing a lot of different kinds of things and tensions. And I really am encouraged. I see a lot of them wrestling really well through those and getting the fact that this isn't going to be simple, is not going to be solved. You know, we'll solve it for this moment and then we'll figure it out, you know, for next year or next week.
Man, that's really good. Well, and like, as you were speaking, I was thinking, like, it seemed like a couple of things you kept saying is like, you know, like really thinking about it and seeking God in prayer. And then also it sounds like just that that requires a lot of communication between the parents. So,
yes. And that's something Janet and I really, you know, had to learn to do was, because it really can be so exhausting just each day that there's just not much left for you and your spouse. And
yeah,
if anything, your interactions are more just transactional. Like, you know, are you going to fix tonight's dinner or am I? Who's going to take this kid to that event? How are we going to pay for this? You know, just transactional stuff. Rather than really loving and cherishing each other and keeping that going.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that and relate to that. So, Dad, you kind of are getting into this, but as you look back on your parenting years, what's one struggle that you remember, and how did God use that? Like, were there any verses that really helped you?
Yeah, how did God use it, and what were the struggles? Well, pretty much everything I just said that parents are struggling with today, I struggled with some version of it, and
yeah,
would imagine that's why I'm aware of it. I think that with me, there always is a fear of inadequacy. I tend to think of myself as a glass half empty that's leaking profusely. And so yeah. I would, you know, constantly wonder, you know, do I know what to do? Do I have what it takes, you know, to be a good husband and to be a good father? And you know, sometimes it would kind of boil down to, you know, small things like, you know, not so much with you, Laura, but with our two sons. They both, as they were growing up, really loved sports. And I just didn't grow up playing sports.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's the constant wonder of, you know, how do I do this? Like, you know, I coached the kids during T-ball, and that's about as far as I could manage was T-ball. But, you know, how do I keep encouraging them in sports and sometimes play sports with them, and yet it's just not my thing, not something I'm good with. But you ask, you know, if there were verses that guided me, and I'm sure in our podcast I've shared these two verses probably a number of times, but they really are two verses that have guided me pretty much through my whole entire adult life. The first one is Deuteronomy 31:8, and it says, "And it is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you.
Hmm.
Do not fear or be dismayed." And then Isaiah 41:10 is like it. It says, "Do not fear, for I'm with you. Do not anxiously look about you, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will uphold you. Surely I will help you with my righteous right hand." And I just had to learn to believe those verses. That in every part of parenting, the parts I thought maybe I was good at and parts I thought maybe I wasn't good at.
Yeah.
That he was there. He was going before me. That he was going to help me. He was going to strengthen me. He was going to uplift me. He was going to make me adequate. And I just had to keep believing that and then do the next thing and see God do it. And just over and over again, both in mine and Janet's marriage and in raising the kids, that was really, you know, the foundation. It was the rock I had to live on every day. And I will say it was firm. It was always adequate. God always, as I sought him, always brought me to the place I needed to be.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, and it's interesting for me, first of all, those are great verses. It's interesting to me to hear you talk about just feeling really unsure of yourself, because I think growing up, I don't know if all kids are this way, I just kind of assumed my parents, like you guys, kind of knew what you were doing all the time, and that everything was some sort of kind of well-developed strategy, you know? And
you know, now I think that's like the dirty little secret of parenting. Because I think every generation of kids look at their parents and just think, well, they seem to know what they're doing, you know, at least most of the time.
Yeah.
And then those kids become parents and they realize my parents were figuring it out as they went.
You know, oh, just totally.
Just like I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And I know you have said, I mean, maybe this kind of goes along with, you've sometimes said that I have, you know, maybe an overinflated view of you. And possibly that's true. I feel like you always have been kind of a hero in my mind. But you've also been a really faithful dad, not a perfect dad, but a faithful dad. And so in the next few questions, I want to kind of walk through a few pivotal parenting moments with you, because I think there's some encouragement for parents in that. So the first one is, okay, so we moved to Durham. I was 11, and after we moved to Durham, you did a lot of the grocery shopping. And, you know, every time that you, I think every single time that you went, I had first dibs on going with you. And, you know, Dad, now that I'm a parent, I know how tired you must have been and probably how much you were craving some silence. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But I know a lot of those grocery trips were after 7, you know, and it would have been faster, quieter to go by yourself. And yet that time with you meant the world to me. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, I look back on that and how impactful it was to me. And I just wonder, like, why did you do that? Like, what were your reasons for doing it? And do you have any encouragement for parents who, you know, they want to invest time in their kids? This is how I feel a lot of times. I want to invest time in my kids and do that one-on-one. And yet there's a lot going on. And sometimes I just feel super tired. So I know you were starting a nonprofit and you had a lot of pressure. You weren't getting a lot of sleep. Like, you still prioritized our family. So how did God sustain you in those years? And I guess, what was your purpose in making that choice?
Well, he certainly sustained me, you know. And yeah, as you said, not perfect at all. But I think in those trips to the grocery stores, it's definitely after 7. A lot of times it'd be like 9 o'clock at night and we'd go to the grocery store. I think that as a parent, one of the things as your kids are growing older, as they're kind of getting close to their teenage years, is you begin to see how precious are any ways that you can still be connected with them.
Hmm.
And just looking for and asking God to open up your eyes to any small ways that you can still be connected with them.
Yeah.
And in those times, they're not necessarily like teaching times or, you know, heavy instruction kind of times. And really, just one of the ingredients is that the kid wants to be with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they have to. You're not forcing them, but they want to be with you. I have a friend who is my age and has kids similar aged as you guys. And he and his son used to do what they would call windshield time. And that meant they would just go get in the car and just drive around. And they didn't know where they were going. They were looking at the windshield, but they were there together. And that was a time where that son felt free to open up to his father. So I think with all those trips to the grocery store that we went to in North Carolina was Harris Teeter all those nights. It was just, I knew that was a time where you wanted to be with me, that it didn't have to be heavy or serious or anything, but it could just be us being together. And I was so grateful for those. And you are right. I hadn't thought about this till you asked, but there were some nights that I would have preferred you not to have gone.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was just kind of fried, and I just was like, I just kind of need some time to myself. But I knew that this may not always be that you'll, you know, really want to be with me. And so I just wanted to, like, buy up those opportunities.
Yeah, man, that's a good perspective. When I remember it, I think sometimes we talked about like real stuff or, you know, challenges, but I feel like, yes, it wasn't a real long drive. And so sometimes we were just kind of, I mean, talking a little bit or, yeah, just, it was pretty, it never felt like there was like, we are going on this drive for X reason. You know, it was just, yeah. So I really appreciate that about you. So thanks, Dad.
Yeah. And I think that's right. I think it became something that this is something we do.
Totally.
Like, you know, the boys didn't want to do it. And Janet, she was teaching school at the time. So like, she's home grading papers and stuff. And so it was just kind of, that was something we do together.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so the next question I have, you know, a few months ago, you sent me a copy of a letter that you had found. I honestly didn't remember it when you showed it to me again, but it was a letter that you wrote to me during my senior year of high school. And I won't read the whole thing, but here's an excerpt. It said, "Dear Laura, our confrontation this morning was one that rattles me a lot. I know that the things I said to you were heated and harsh. They were also honest in terms of how I see things, and yet I think they weren't really reflective of my deeper concerns. I think my bigger concern is that you seem to me to be very unhappy from every angle of your life. Your friendships, jobs, church, family, etc., don't seem to bring much joy into your life. Even your diet and exercise regime seem to draw you more into yourself and detach you more from others. I can't tell you how sad I am when I think about you being unhappy. There are times in terms of my relationship with you when I honestly feel like the one thing I could do that would make you happy is to disengage from you. I don't know if that's what you really want or not. I hope it is not. And whether it is your desire or not, as one who loves you dearly, I will not ever disengage from you." So there's the excerpt. And so this is, again, my senior year. This was around the time I was accepted to Baylor. And so, again, like, now I'm looking at this letter as an adult, not a kid. You had all these concerns for me and concerns about our relationship. And yet it's basically time for me to launch and move out on my own. And, you know, Dad, as a parent of small kids, I can't quite imagine what that was like after having me at home for about 18 years. Mm-hmm. I do think foster care has given us a little taste of that feeling of this whole, you know, kind of like, things could go a lot of directions from this point, and just some of those trajectories are unbearable to consider. So I guess you have, like, walked that path. You walked that with me, and we all know that we have to trust God with our kids, but that can be easier to say than to do. So what?
Yes.
Totally, yeah.
Yes.
So what helped you to really do that?
What helped me? You know, I think as a parent, you know, just a minute or two, we were talking about the dirty little secret of parents is you think they know what they're doing, but they're really figuring out in real time. And I think that those years in your life, I was, and Janet and I both, were just figuring it out in real time.
Like, yeah.
We knew that for you to, you know, have the life that God wanted you to have, the life that would, you know, bring you joy and freedom and as Christ said, abundant life, that ultimately it had to be transacted between you and God.
Yeah.
And so we could keep encouraging you towards things, and we could, you know, at times exert parental control, though, you know, in the later teen years and as they go to college, parental control is, you know, not what it used to be.
Kind of. Yeah. Thing.
And if your kind of whole approach is control, then you get in those years and it all falls apart. I think it was just everyday praying.
You know,
And, you know, what I wrote to you in that letter that day, in some ways, I was telling God the same story.
Huh.
Of, you know, God, she is just miserable. She is just absolutely miserable. And I don't know what to do. And so,
yeah.
You know, when you went to Baylor, you know, the thing I loved about Baylor was, you know, it's a Christian university, and it's definitely one of those places where you can find what you're looking for. And if
yeah.
you're looking for just very godly, you know, university students, you'll find them there. If you're looking for, you know, Christian students who are trying to figure out how much can I get by with and still say that I'm a Christian,
yeah.
you'll find them there.
Yes.
And if you want to find folks that have just abandoned the faith or never come to the faith, you'll find them there. And so I knew that there was the potential for you to thrive well there, though I still knew But really, that is up to you and God. And so I don't really know how to answer that, Laura, other than just it's happening in real time. You don't have 6 months as a parent to freeze action and then go figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You just keep engaging, keep being honest and loving, keep crying out to God, keep maintaining your own faith in the Lord, and just trust that He will do His will and that He hears your prayers. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thank you so much for praying for me and not disengaging from me. 'Cause I know, you know, I mean, I really do believe a big part of like God's kindness to me is in result of your prayers. Mm. So anyways, yeah, I mean, thankfully by the grace of God, we all got through that season. Yes. Everybody lived.
Yes.
God did provide godly friends at Baylor, and then but then college ended, and you know, I had dated a guy for a lot of college, and we broke up during my senior year. So, you know, that plan kind of changed at the at the end of college. And I had spent some time in a country in Asia, and I thought God might be leading me back there longer term. But as I prayed and got wise counsel, you know, God wasn't leading me there. He was leading me to a great church in the Midwest. And the only problem with that was, you know, it was a pretty small town, and no one was really impressed when I told them that's where I was moving. It wasn't Dallas or Seattle or, I mean, all the hot places in 2005. So, and most depressingly of all to me, I think, was, you know, this church had like tons of awesome single ladies and not many young single men. And so I made the decision to move there, but I feel like my heart was divided on that. So I remember we were at the lake the weekend before I moved there. And I remember you sitting me down and saying at that picnic table on the back porch area, you said, you know, you're looking at this place as a place of death for you.
Mm-hmm.
But God led you there, Laura, so it's a place of life.
Mm-hmm.
And you were so right, because those were three really blessed years, and you know, I grew a lot there and made some really wonderful friendships. And during that time, I started dating Adam from 1,000 miles away. So yep. Just in so many different ways, God was really kind to me. But so here's my question: like, what did you know about God that made you confident enough to say that to me? And I guess, what's your encouragement to parents who are in a season that feels like death? Maybe that's, you know, as a parent dying to their own plans or walking with their kids through a painful season.
You know, I guess what I knew about God, to say that you're seeing this as a place of death, but He sees it as a place of life, is what He says in John 10:10, you know, the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that you might have life and have it more abundantly.
Hmm.
And so I knew that that's what God's called you to, and that you and I both were convinced that God had led you to the city that is a place of life. Now, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, I didn't tell you the other part of the story.
What do you mean?
The other part of the story was, it is also a place of death, because you're going to have to die to some things.
Yeah.
You're going to have to die to maybe some ambitions that were needing to be refined. You're going to have to die to maybe what some would have thought as being a lot more strategic place, or, you know, heroic kind of place to go to. So there was going to be death there. But, you know, the Bible, close to John 10:10, it says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains by itself alone. But if it dies, it brings forth much fruit. And that's exactly what God did in your life during that time, was there were some things that had to die. Like, in the sense, you had to die. You
know, yeah.
Aspects of yourself had to die. But in that death, as God always does when he calls us to death, he brings life. And so I knew that if you would believe that, and if you would open your mind and heart up to God to bring that to pass, that there was no doubt that it was going to happen, because God's the one who says all that.
Yeah.
But again, just like, you know, when we took you to Baylor, you know, maybe I could see things a little more clearly than you could, but it still was a transaction that needed to happen between you and God. And I could be cheering you on, I could be encouraging you, you know, but you and God had to wrestle through it.
Yeah, well, and I'm so glad that you took that the direction that you did, because actually that gets into a lot more nuance than, you know, I think like now 20 years later, it doesn't feel, you know, I don't feel what I felt then, but you're right. It really, I mean, like, you know, I was just thinking about teaching at the school that I taught at, and it was an inner city middle school. I was like, I was horrible my first year. I mean, it was like they were observing me like at least once a week. Like, it was horrible. I was just because I was so bad at it, and I had to grow so much. And I remember every single, so both my first and second summer, I talked to my mentor, Felicia, about how I thought God might be leading me to just get a job working at a coffee shop instead. And she was like, or maybe it was Sherry, but one of them said, nope, like that, God is not telling you to do that. You need to grow. So that's a really good point that a lot of times, yeah, the life comes through the death.
Yes, yes.
But I'm sure as a parent, especially, you know, as life goes on with kids, like that's a hard thing to watch.
Well, it is. But, you know, one thing that happened, you know, one of your, I don't know, blessings, curses, is you're the oldest kid. So we were like figuring this all out, you know, with you. I think by time Will, you know, who, you know, as you know, actually ended up in the same city.
Yeah.
I think by time he got there, I had seen God work. I had seen things happen. And so, though I do remember some very, you know, painful conversations with Will, especially his freshman year when he was, you know, sometimes just so unhappy. I knew that if he just hung in there and kept trusting the Lord, kept, you know, involving himself in the church that you guys were involved in, which was just such a marvelous church.
Oh, totally. Yes.
That he would do fine.
Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah. Okay. So after that, Adam and I got married. I moved to California. And then about 5 years later, we started having kids. And so the season of, you know, a number of young kids was a challenging season for me, which we've talked about on the podcast before. But I was thinking about, I remember calling you one night after a particularly challenging week. I think that was one of those seasons in life where every time I talked to you on the phone, I cried.
Yes.
Because if I'm anywhere close to crying and I talk to you, I'm going to cry for sure. So anyways, but I remember just crying and telling you like all the ways I was struggling and just all the ways I was really worried that I was damaging our kids, you know? And you didn't really even go down that path with me in the moment, but you just said, you know, Laura, even if you never change, God still loves you.
Yes.
And I mean, that was just a profound, like, thing to hear you say, because I would have said it was true, but when you said it in that moment, like, I just couldn't believe it was true. And I think you heard what I was saying, and you saw my heart underneath, like, I couldn't figure out how to fix this.
Yes.
And so I think what you did was you reminded me that the hope wasn't in my ability to fix myself, but just that God was, I mean, not just, but that God was irrevocably committed to me, you know?
Yes.
So, and I think honestly, that was part of a real, that was sort of one of the beginning steps of me having to really like think through, do I really believe this is true? So mm-hmm. Why do our kids need to hear this from us? And also, especially with young kids, like, how do we encourage them to change and grow while also communicating that God's love for them isn't tied to, you know, behavior modification?
Boy, that last one's really challenging, you know, because part of the faith, part of how we live out our faith is, as you know, it says in Colossians and in Ephesians, we're to put off old things and we're to put on new things, that we really are to change. And so, you know, helping any of us, children or adults, to learn how to trust God for the grace that we need to change. And then when we're just failing miserably, to trust that He loves us.
Yeah.
And He gets that we're failing, and he does, you know, want us to do better. And He will bring that about as we trust Him. You know, I've been meditating this week on a quote from St. Augustine, who said, you know, Lord, command what you will, and then give what you command. And what he's saying is, you know, God, command whatever you want us to be and do, command that, but then give us the grace, give us the strength to do that which you command.
Yeah.
And so part of it is He loves us even if we don't change or if we're failing miserably. And then part of it is also both children and parents learning. And in those things He's wanting us to grow in, whether it's, you know, picking up our toys or treating each other with respect or whatever, that we really are to trust Him. We really are to go to Him and ask Him for the grace. So sometimes, and I've seen you do this with your kids, sometimes it is just taking a time out and you and the kid praying, and you praying for God to give both of you the grace that you need to be the person God's called you to be and to confess His unfailing love, you know, no matter what. And I think the reason that's important is because we tend to just screw up God's love and screw up God's grace in 100 different ways, rather than just freely believing it and receiving it and living in it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and like two things that I heard you saying were just, you know, believing that God will, like, has the grace for us, and also that He's committed to helping us grow. And that, I mean, I think that kind of reminds me of, like, around that same time, I remember our pastor, Bevan, saying in a sermon, real life transformation happens in the trenches where no one can see. And that was another light bulb moment for me in that season of parenting, to just realize that, you know, there were like 100 places where I needed visible external growth to happen.
Yeah.
But that realizing, like, if that was going to be real and not just a performance thing, like, what I needed could only flow out of a change in who I was when no one was looking except for God.
Yes.
And I think, you know, it was encouraging too, because I, you know, was in the trenches as a stay-at-home mom of toddlers. And so this was kind of like an accelerated season of heart transformation for me. But yeah, just believing that God could change me. And I know I've heard you say, God made you who He made you in large part through the ups and downs of our family. I remember you saying that in an interview we did on the podcast with you and Mom. So can you share any about that, or maybe kind of cast some vision that God is doing something deep in us even when there's not visible change?
Oh, yeah. You know, I heard a Christian speaker when I was in my early 20s who says that our character is best developed in the context of binding relationships. And what he meant by that was, you know, if I, you know, go down the street and see some guy that I've never seen before and say, I'm going to be your committed friend for the rest of my life. I mean, not only is that ridiculous, but it's meaningless because there's no commitment there. I don't even know the person. But when you're married to your wife and you've made vows to your wife And when you have committed to God and to your children to be their father, then you're locked in.
Yeah.
You know, you're bound in. And that's going to provide a perfect and sometimes hard context for your character to be forged. And so it is in those small daily decisions of parenting and of marriage where you're learning to trust God and trust what He says in the Word, learning to die to yourself, learning to believe that He will enable you each day to know what to do that day as a parent, as a spouse, and really believe that He hears your prayers, and especially your prayers for your kids. And you don't know how He's going to answer the prayers, but you do know that He hears them and that He is more committed to your children than you'll ever be. And so you can leave it there. So I think what I would say, it's your character's forged in that kind of a binding relationship.
Yeah.
And along with that is just your daily moment-by-moment trust in the Word of God and in the character of God to be what you need Him to be for you.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dad. I appreciate you sharing. I mean, for me, it was encouraging. So fell asleep, so hopefully that's not a bad sign. But... Right.
Well, I hope that didn't happen to any of our listeners as well.
I know. We'll here's hoping. Gosh. But would you go ahead and wrap us up?
You bet. Well, we do just cheer you parents on. So much know the challenges you're going through, and yet so confident that as you trust in the Word of God, He'll be with you. So definitely want to... just say that as we wrap up. I also want to just remind you that Leadership Edge is about developing Christian leaders in their marriages, families, communities, churches, all of their lives, and that we have plenty of resources on our website that you might want to look at, and that's www.lead-edge.com. But one thing I want to say before we wrap up is I know that there are two young fathers that listen to our podcasts fairly often. They're friends of our family, and they're named Robbie and Blaine. And I think Robbie lives in Charleston, South Carolina, I believe, and Blaine lives in Durham, North Carolina. And just definitely want to give a shout out to those two young fathers and just tell them that I'm praying for them today, and confident that as they look to the Lord, God will give them all the grace they need.
That's cool. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Dad. And thanks, listeners, for joining us.
Listeners, if you would like to find out more about John's thoughts on life, leadership, and mentoring, please go to the Leadership Edge website at www.lead-edge.com. Or if you have questions or ideas of topics for future podcasts, please reach out to us at lai@lead-edge.com. We look forward to hearing from you.